have we got a treat for you, everybody. One of the AgriTalk regulars is on the show again today, but it's not like we usually have him on. As a matter of fact, he might be casting a line, ripping some lips, and feeling alive while listening to this Memorial Day edition of AgriTalk.
Live from the unofficial start to official non-calendar summertime in America via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we spend some time with Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain and the Grain Markets and Other Stuff podcast. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Grain Markets and Other Stuff podcast available on the AgriTalk app.
That's right.
Really
That's
cool, right. dude. Really yeah. cool.
Yeah, yep. he's got great and, stuff on there.
And when he gets into the other stuff on that mm-hmm. podcast, it's mm-hmm. worth listening to.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Talk a little bit of fishing. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that Nashville music scene.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the drain of population out of states to
Ooh.
The Nashville area. One of his comments last week, did you see it?
I did. I saw a little something on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah. About how houses are selling in the midst of the COVID crisis.
Yeah.
How houses are selling in that Nashville area. He said they don't last a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices are going up. And people are moving out of New York. And people are moving out of Illinois. And people are moving out of California. And they're finding what looks to be a really nice settling spot there in that mm-hmm. Nashville area. That's going to be an area to watch, man. No doubt about that.
Absolutely. And by the way, if you're keeping score at home, it is the unofficial start to official non-calendar summertime in America. First day of summer comes on June 20. So if you happen to miss it today, there's another one coming around.
The official one is coming later.
Yes. Yes. Calendar summer starts June 20.
Gotcha.
I just want to be real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to get what do you say? You don't want to give Memorial Day more credit than what it deserves here is the start of the grilling season.
At least there, yes. It should loom large in our minds the sacrifices made and all that. But
that's right.
Let's not get crazy.
That's right. That's right. We talked about it this morning.
We did.
On in the first hour. Spent a lot of time talking about what Memorial Day means to Davis, what it means to mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And just that, just to summarize, I'll just say this, just be thoughtful in how you celebrate. Be responsible in how we celebrate. Yeah. It's time to celebrate again. I really believe that, Davis. I think the country is ready for it. I think individuals are ready for it. I think that people have a much better understanding of what is expected of them as we go forward. And it's like I said on Friday on the free-for-all. Mm-hmm. It's not that there's not some knuckleheads out there, because there are.
Oh, there's plenty. There's plenty.
Yes. But the responsible thing to do is stay away from some of those knuckleheads and make sure that you keep yourself in a safe situation here for the celebration that everybody should have.
Stay away
All right,
from
buddy.
The knuckleheads. Yes.
Yeah.
Wrote it down. We'll see.
You know, that could be why they keep some separation between you and me.
Too many knuckleheads in one room is a bad idea.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, man, let's get to the news. What's going on?
Well, Chip, the Paris and Black Sea wheat futures markets started to lead U.S. wheat prices last week with improved growing conditions in Russia, pulling prices lower into the end of the week. And with more rain in the forecast for this week, wheat traders are looking for wheat futures to test underlying support. Technically, July soft red wheat futures saw an increase in volatility starting Wednesday last week. The push to the upside stopped just short of a full test of resistance at 525. That accelerated the price setback into the end of the week. As of Friday's close, July hard red winter wheat was 7.25 cents lower at 508¾. July soft red dropped a dime to 444½. July spring wheat sagged 5¾ lower to 512¼, Chip.
You know, I'm very proud of you, Davis.
Yes.
I am very proud of you because
you
have been talking about the Black Sea crop, the Russian crop, the Ukraine crop. And I haven't heard your eyes roll once that we've been talking about it because I know it just pains you sometimes.
It does.
That we do put that much focus on the wheat crop and the exports coming out of the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. But, man, oh, man, with the currency, I won't call it a currency war, but with the currency struggles the U.S. is having with that Russian ruble right now, I just don't know what it's going to take to move that focus away from Russian supplies back over to the U.S. That's all I'm saying.
I just rolled my eyes. You couldn't see it, but I rolled them hard. Corn futures have been stuck in a sideways. Corn futures have been stuck in a sideways trading range for the past 4 weeks. July corn futures have pivoted around the 320 level in May, and so far have been able to stay above spring lows posted last month. Yep. Traders indicate they will keep a close eye on the ethanol situation this week. Word is a vessel filled with U.S. ethanol that was headed to Saudi Arabia is now on a path to China. Also, escalating tensions between the U.S. and China over the treatment of Hong Kong could generate demand uncertainties for all U.S. ag commodities. When trade wrapped up last week, July corn futures were a quarter of a cent higher at 318. September corn slipped a quarter of a penny to 322 and three quarters. December corn closed at 332 and three quarters, down a quarter cent. Chip.
Yeah, Mark Gold, top third ag marketing, was on the show on Friday. And with these Chinese uncertainties that we are dealing with right now, his bottom line was, ask yourself, if this gets as bad as what we think it might get with China, what's your downside risk? Is there another 10% downside potential or risk in corn? Is it there in cattle? Is it there in hogs? Is it there in beans? If you think that it is there, which is kind of hard to deny, I guess, maybe you ought to consider having some puts in place.
Yep. Well, Chip, the latest conflict between the U.S. and China sent July soybean futures last week to a new low for the month at 828.5. July bean trade had been confirmed in a 30-cent trading range since April 22nd, and Friday's test of the bottom of the range was the first in 3 weeks. This week, traders will be looking for additional export demand from China and other importing nations. Planting progress on corn and soybeans will also be monitored as the last plant date for corn, Chip. It's rapidly approaching in some of the least planted areas. That could send some intended corn acres over to soybeans. On Friday's close, July bean futures were 1¾ cents lower, 833 and a quarter. August off 2 cents, 836 and a half. Novi bean futures closed at 844 and a half, down a penny, Chip.
Yep, very good. You know, I was thinking as you were talking about, you know, the late planted areas.
Yeah.
A year ago, remember how concerned we were about the late plantings, justifiably so.
Yes.
But a year ago, Memorial Day weekend felt like 4th of July weekend trade. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt like it had that much importance. This year, we're just kind of struggling into the weekend. Yeah.
July cotton ended last week at the lows of the week. July cotton was 53 points lower, 57.33. December cotton fell 91 ticks to 57.79. And Chip, ahead of Friday's cattle on feed report, June live cattle futures were $1.10 lower at 97.70. August cattle off 90 cents, 97.32 and a half. August feeders 7½ cents lower at 128.80. And finally, on the snout side, last week's pressure on pork product prices and cash hog bids sent futures into the weekend with lower prices. On Friday, June lean hogs 57½ lower, 58.77 and a half. July fell $1.27 and a half to 55.90, pal.
All right, real quick, cattle on feed report. Total number of cattle on feed on May 1, right in line with trade expectations, down 5% from last year. You guys have a great Memorial Day. We've got a conversation with Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain, coming up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Join AgriTalk the first week of June for Pork Week, paying tribute to the pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and HiPor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
And welcome back on this Memorial Day to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Big plans there, buddy?
Small plans. Very small plans. Small plans inside of a small bubble.
Is there any way that we can find some time to fish?
There may be some fishing. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I can donate some jigs.
Nice. Donating jigs to the
jig
population.
I don't know who collects them out of that. Yeah, I don't know who collects them out of that lake or what they do. That's exactly the spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
They call me a philanthropist when it comes to fishing. I don't know what they mean by that, but
you just give and give and give, don't you?
I'm trying to earn that one to hang on the wall.
You know, yeah, well, it's Memorial Day, and I would almost bet that the guy that's up next year is probably out on a boat doing a little bit of fishing as we're speaking. Joe Vaklevic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Doing good. How are you guys?
Good, good, good. So, yeah, a couple of years. Has it been 2 years ago now that you moved down to the Nashville area?
Almost exactly 2 years. Almost to the week.
So as you look around at everything and reevaluate your decision here 2 years later, what do you think about?
It looks even better now than it did at the time, given what's gone on with the virus and the way that the two states have handled it, which are totally different and for different reasons, of course. But, you know, I talk to my friends and family who live in Illinois still, and they're not happy with the way things are being handled there largely. You know, things are still shut down. The state is hemorrhaging money. I mean, they're not bringing in tax money because businesses are closed. Small business owners are upset. Meanwhile, here in Tennessee, I mean, things are reopening. You know, we're a little bit more free down here, I guess. So I like the weather and as you mentioned, the fishing opportunities much better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I keep threatening to come down there and go fishing with you, but I
is that a threat?
That done at some point. Yeah, I'm going to get that done. So Memorial Day, Joe, I mean, let's reflect on this a little bit here before we get into what's going on with the markets it's a special day. It's one of those days that we go to the cemetery. We pay our respect to those that paid the ultimate price for the freedoms that in some cases we're trying to reclaim in states across the country. But the freedoms that we all enjoy, Memorial Day, what's it mean to you?
Well, a lot of people forget that. I think these days a lot of people just think of it as a 3-day weekend, unfortunately, and that's not the case. I mean, it's a time of mourning, I guess. I don't personally have any family who died in military service. I have a lot of family who had been in the military, but yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like the listeners of this show, especially, probably are a little bit more aware of what we're talking about. I feel like there's maybe a different crowd out there of people who live in this country who are maybe not so aware as they should be.
Yeah. You know, and in a lot of ways, I've talked to plenty of people that have said, you know, I feel kind of bad treating Memorial Day as a big party, a big 3-day weekend. But it's okay to celebrate, too. It's okay to celebrate the lives that those people lived and to celebrate the sacrifices that they made. We just need to do it respectful and to be mindful of why we're doing it, why we're celebrating such a great for such a great reason. We just need
to be mindful. It's that and also, I mean, a lot of people in this country work real hard and a 3-day weekend's hard to come by. So if a person wants to spend time and have some fun with their family, I don't know that you can blame them for that, but again, it's got to be observed.
Amen to that. Okay, let's talk about what's going on in the livestock markets first, and I want to start with this. What do you got on the smoker this weekend?
That's a good question. I will do some pork probably.
Yeah.
Pulled pork is tough. A good thing for us to it's easy for me to do. I don't have to pay a ton of attention to it. It's a forgiving meat. If I mess it up, nobody will notice. If I put a brisket on and I mess it up, it will be noticed.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, these markets and the livestock markets in particular, the volatility that we've had to deal with, for a lot of the guys that look at the cattle futures, look at hog futures as a tool that they use in their risk management plans, Joe, I don't know if they're even a suitable tool to use right now, are they?
It depends on the circumstance. I mean, if you were somebody who had been hedged in the cattle market for a long time, and say you were hedged prior to this virus outbreak, and now you're selling your cash cattle at 120, but the futures are at 99, you're actually in really good shape. Right. But it's probably not ideal. I mean, you'd like to see a much closer, tighter relationship between cash and futures for this to be a viable hedge tool, because it really, in the essence of it, it should be a viable hedge tool on both sides, not only for the cattle producer, but also, as much as I don't like to say this, for the packer, I guess, or for whoever the end user is. I mean, it should be just like, you know, buyers and sellers, growers and end users of corn can use corn futures, cattle futures. You'd like to see it work the same way. And it's kind of, there's that disparity there, and it's not, It's not the way I'd like to see the market function.
Yeah. I hear you. You know, when it comes to risk management, using the futures and the options markets, if you know how to do it with corn, you should know how to do it with cattle. And I'm not sure if that's logic applies right now, because there are all the different subtleties and nuances of hedging on the livestock market right now. It's a difficult task, if you ask me, and you get yourself into some trouble.
Yeah, so right now is very difficult. I mean, if you're a cattle producer at this point, are you going to sell futures at 99 when cash is 120? And then say you do finally get into that conversion situation, say you end up losing 15 bucks on the board, but the cash doesn't move. That doesn't really accomplish a whole lot for you. Right. So, it's not functioning the way that I would like to see it function, or that I think even the cattle producer, even the guy that had been hedged, I think they'd like to see it function a little bit more efficiently.
And really what we're talking about is price discovery, because that 120 bid that you're talking about, sometimes that just materializes out of thin air and it's because of the formula base. The actual negotiated cash trade is probably taking place somewhere closer to 90 bucks than 120. And how do you even function when your cash market is trading at a $25 or a $30 spread during a week?
That's part of the problem, I think, is the lack of transparency, the contract cattle business. There's so much of this stuff that is done out of the view of public eye, I think. And it's increasingly headed in that direction the last several years. So I don't know. It's a problem. I don't know how we fix it.
Right. Okay. One thing that I have been impressed by is the amount of demand for pork, the amount of demand for beef. We've seen some incredible pork product prices, unimaginable, really, boxed beef prices out there. Consumers are still buying the product, aren't they? If they can get it, they're still buying it.
If you go to the grocery store, absolutely. And to go back to the reopening discussion, I mean, the states that have reopened, I would imagine that you're starting to see some of the demand return in the restaurants and places like that, but not close to where it had been. So it's a function of two things. I mean, demand at the retail level is excellent. Demand at the restaurant level is not really that great. But then also production capacity, slaughter capacity is not back to where it needs to be yet. And that's the big hurdle right now, I think.
Right. You know, talking about I'm concerned for a couple of demand shocks. Number one, on the bacon side, the pork belly side, when those restaurants, the food service that you're talking about, when they do come back and they do start putting bacon on everything, we've got a potential demand shock there. And then the barbecue joints, when they start increasing the demand for pork butts again, like you were talking about for your pulled pork, hey, there's another potential demand shock right there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I don't know how that reconciles itself. If you get a big boost in demand while prices are still high, I mean, ideally, what I'd like to see is a return to normalcy, which would mean much cheaper boxed beef and cheaper pork, but, you know, normal slaughter capacity, normal basis. I mean, that's what I'd like to see. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out when we get back to the point, like you said, where food service is open and restaurants are full capacity again and everything's back to normal. And I do believe that everything will get back to normal. I don't know what the timing is going to be or exactly how it's going to look. It's going to be interesting, though. I mean, just like everything else we've seen here the last 3 months, it will be an interesting deal.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we are talking with Joe Vaclavic today. Joe's Standard Grain. He's a regular here on AgriTalk. And when we come back, we're going to take the conversation over to the grain markets. We had some details on CFAP, some other federal supports last week, and kind of some lackluster trade in the grain markets. We'll find out Joe's take on that next. Joe Vaclavic and I were just talking about the solemn celebration that we have in this great country in the last weekend of May every year. Memorial Day is a day to remember and to remember those that served in defense of this country and sacrificed everything to keep our country free. From a market perspective, this is the traditional start of grilling season for livestock, and it's the start of driving season for the energies. Stay-at-home orders, social distancing, yeah, they threaten those seasonals, but Americans are reclaiming liberties and reclaiming freedoms. So, as we remember those lost in defense of this country and say thank you to their families, celebrating their lives and what they did for this country may have never been more important. Go for a drive. Go see some friends. Visit the cemetery. Fire up the grill. Just do it responsibly.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Memorial Day 2020. We're talking with Joe Vaclavic from Standard Grain. Got Davis Michelson. I think Davis is still out
there. Yes? Yeah. Hey, can you send over some more jigs? I'm all out already.
I got plenty.
Quarter ounce lead heads, please.
I got every color variety you could ever possibly imagine.
So what are you, Davis, what are you using for the plastic on there? Are you using just a straight twister tail? Or are you going with a double twist? What do you got?
What I do is I take a twister tail, but then I go ahead and bifurcate the tail itself. Oh. So you get the double twister.
Yeah.
So it's a twister.
It's a twist on the really twister.
It doesn't work at all, but it does give me something to do while I'm not catching fish.
Well, evidently, it takes the jig to the snags a little bit faster.
Straight to the snags. I'm a giver, you know.
Oh, goodness. Okay, we're talking with Joe Vaclavic. Let's get back to the markets here. Joe, the volume, the activity in the grain markets, what do you make of what we're going through right now?
Well, the row crops, I mean, have very, very much been kind of a sideways affair the last three, four weeks, I guess. You've really still got, in my opinion, a fairly significant downtrend in place in the soybean market. Pretty much the same thing in the corn market, although you could argue it's been busted just because of a sideways trade. But, for this time of year, I mean, you got a whole growing season in front of you. Very little volatility. You would maybe make the argument that there's not a whole lot of concern regarding crop production. And I guess there's no major reason to be concerned just yet. There are weather problems. Don't get me wrong. You look at a North Dakota, or you look at the western portion of the Southern Plains. There's some weather issues. There was all that rain over the Central Corn Belt over the last week or so. But I mean, grand scheme of things, you know, the crop's going in pretty quickly. Nobody's overly excited about big upside movement, and we're just kind of stuck here.
Yeah. And we didn't even get a boost at the end of the Brazilian growing season on the Safrina corn crop. It felt like maybe we were going to, and then they picked up some rains, kind of stabilized that crop down there too, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And South America, they didn't have the best crops of all time, but they were pretty close. Yeah. And you got to remember that they expand acreage down there constantly. They're in constant expansion mode. And that's a big problem for us. I mean, they're continually growing more and on more acreage. Their currency is so much cheaper than ours. Yep. It makes it very difficult for us to compete.
So longer term, how do we compete with that, Joe? I mean, the skeptics out there over the last two decades have been saying forever that, hey, we're just going to lose this bean market to Brazil and Argentina. It hasn't happened. It's because we are pretty good at growing soybeans in this country, but the competition just keeps racking up, and then you throw the trade battles in on top of it, and soybeans being tossed around as a pawn in all of this, it makes it really difficult.
The thing that scares me about beans is, how do I put this? There's a chart of U.S. wheat exports as a share of the global exports. Do you know the chart I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
So back in the 70s, the U.S. accounted for half of all wheat exports to the globe. And we have since steadily fallen to about maybe 12 to 15%. Mm-hmm. I fear, worst case scenario, that it turns into that, and that we become more of a residual supplier of soybeans on the global export market rather than a major supplier or a key supplier. We're not to that point yet, but the way that the trend's going, that's possible. It's possible, and kind of a scary thought when you consider that demand for U.S. soybeans is essentially twofold. It's about, I mean, not recently, but it's about half crush and it's about half exports. And if you continually lose export share year over year, and I'm not talking just because of the trade war or because of the virus, I'm just talking because Brazil has a lot of advantages. That's problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we.
I hope it doesn't turn into that, but I can see how it could. I could see how that could happen.
Right. Well, I'm going to continue the conversation here because I think it is a legitimate concern, and one of the reasons that it is a concern is all the conversation about the supply chains. It doesn't matter if we're talking about raw materials for medical supplies. Doesn't matter if we're talking about cattle and hogs and beef and pork. Doesn't matter if we're talking about soybeans and soybean meal, soybean oil. The conversation around the supply chain has never been more active than what it is right now. And the message from the White House has been to get rid of the globalization and let's just take care of us here at home. What if we end up in a situation like that?
I don't like that. I think most farmers would like to return to a more, I don't know if it was ever really free trade, but a more open trade environment,
freer,
I guess.
Freer and fairer, yeah.
Freer and fairer. And I don't know if it was ever fair either. There's a lot of different views about China and their dealings and the way that they handle business. And I probably agree with the president on a lot of that stuff. Do I agree with the tariffs and the trade war? I don't know where I stand on that. Doesn't really matter where I stand. But in any case, no, I think the majority of farmers and cattle producers, hog producers, I mean, they'd like to see those export chains opened. They'd like to have their products available to as many different potential buyers as possible.
Yeah. Okay. It's been popular here on AgriTalk to kind of take the bear side on corn and the bull side on soybeans. Do you fit in that argument there, Joe?
Maybe to some extent. I think that you could run into a situation where the soybean market could be drastically undervalued here. We know we're going to have a little bit bigger acreage than probably what they told us in March, but you reduce that national yield by a few bushels. Say China really does come in for a whole bunch of new crop beans. You could paint yourself a pretty friendly picture. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago. It was really pre-trade war a couple of years ago where the soybean market used to trade $2, $3, $4 ranges in a calendar year. We used to trade enormous ranges in the beans. And we haven't seen that recently. I think the trade war might have something to do with it. But in any case, don't rule out big moves in the soybean market. It's a little bit more difficult maybe to paint a friendly picture in the corn market, but it can be done. You make the argument that that Informa acreage number is real and it's a 94 or 94.2, whatever their number was.
Right.
And you do run into a situation where the yield's 5 to 10 bushels light. ethanol turns a corner and this government bailout, whatever it is, helps them out and margins get come back. China buys a bunch of corn. I mean, things can change. I mean, they change very quickly. You look at what's just happened over the last 3 months. We changed very, very quickly for the worse. But I've seen other situations where things can change for the better just as quickly, if not faster.
And unexplainably sometimes. I mean, you go back to that 2008 market, Joe, and that was inflation driven in a big way. And that's another popular theme that has been talked about on AgriTalk is the inflation argument that with the amount of money that is available out there right now, eventually inflation has to kick in. And eventually that inflation has got to slip into the ag commodities.
It's like funny how inflation is why the stock market's up, right? But it doesn't seem to help the corn market or the bean market. I don't know. I mean, people have been talking about inflation for in the grain markets as long as I've been in this business, and I don't know that I've ever really seen any evidence of it. So I don't know. It seems like a longer term issue. I mean, I've seen a weaker dollar, I've seen a stronger dollar, and I mean, stronger dollar is not helpful, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be a factor right now.
Gotcha. Okay, strategies. Anything that you feel corn and soybean guys need to be doing right now?
No. The flat. I mean, flat price. I can't get excited about prices that lose money. I can't get excited about making marketing decisions in that sort of environment. Basis is always something to look at during planting every single year, regardless of the situation. Look at basis during planting. It's a lot of times where you see some opportunities. We have seen basis improve, I think, in some areas of the country, especially where ethanol has opened up again. So that's something to take a look at. Don't be afraid to take a look at some of the spread opportunities out there. Okay. One that I was looking at as an example, say you do have some early new crop corn sales on, there's already 25 cents of carry from D's 20 out to July 21. At 25 to 30 is historically a pretty good time to lock in that carry if you've got bins. Now, granted, this is a different conversation. Spreads can go wider now because CME changed their storage charges, but that's something to look at. So I guess the things that I would look at are probably about everything but flat price here. I would look at spreads and look at basis, that sort of thing, because the flat price is not doing you any favors.
I got to give you 30 seconds on this because you're so good at this. What should we not be doing right now?
I don't know what the markets are going to be doing. I wouldn't panic. That's what I wouldn't do. These markets, they go in cycles every year, every calendar year. So I wouldn't panic. I wouldn't make panic decisions. I don't know what the market's going to do, but I don't panic when all the news is bearish and everything looks bad.
Gotcha. Joe, thank you so much, man. Happy Memorial Day to you. Enjoy it.
Yep. See you, Chip.
All right. Thank you. That is Joe Vaklevic. Standard Grain with some solid take there at the end on what not to do. You can't panic. It's just the wrong thing to do. All right, you guys, stay tuned. Coming up next, we've got Kerry Artak from Artak Advisory right here on AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture farms on for our family and yours.
And welcome back on this Memorial Day to AgriTalk. It's been a great conversation with Joe Vaklevic there. You know, he doesn't mind to polish up the crystal ball every now and then, Davis, but he's just pretty dadgum matter of fact, isn't he?
He really is. He really is. Didn't pull any punches and has, I've come to know him as a very level-headed, square thinker.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And you get to talk to him more than I do on AgriTalk because he's obviously, he fills in for me from time to time, and he's a great fill-in, and I love listening to those shows. But it's a lot of fun every now and then. Couple of weeks ago, we had Ted Seifert on so that I could do a show with him. Right. And now a show with Joe so that I could have a longer conversation with him and really figure out where and what he's thinking about. You know, before we got the rally going last year, and a lot of it was a planning delay, a lot of it was had to do with the weather. But even before that rally started, Joe was the one, remember? Joe was one of the first ones on AgriTalk to start saying, you know what, I think people are getting too negative on what is going on with this bean market, because it people have just gotten too negative. We could see a rally develop at any time in here, so we got to watch out for that. I was very impressed by it at that time, and you know, he doesn't want to get all that negative on beans right now.
Yep. I hope he's right. I really do. You know, you mentioned we had Ted Seifried.
Yes.
And now we've got Joe Vaclavic. I know I'm going to get a text from Bubba at any point here.
What's going to happen?
Hey, when do I get it? What's the deal? So I don't know if there's a Bubba show coming up or not, but I mean, eventually, sure.
I just don't know if
it's safe now, right now. There's no telling what he's going to say. It's too hot.
Jeez, I hope we didn't ruin his Monday Memorial Day.
We love you, Bubba. We need you.
We do.
We need you.
We absolutely do. No doubt about it. Hey, and it is Monday. The markets are closed. Markets are closed, but that doesn't mean that it's not time to get an update from Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Want to remind everybody that if you go to artakadvisory.com, that's A-R-T-A-C advisory.com, Kerry will get you started up with a 2-week free trial to his services. All right, let's get started. What do you got, Kerry?
All right, Chip. Well, let's start with August live cattle. A buy signal from early May does remain intact this week above 91 even, expecting continued price gains over the next 3 to 5 weeks or so. That'll put us into late January up to 107 even, where the broader live cattle market can actually top out into later summer. Now, a secondary buy signal would emerge into later summer if the lead contract, presently August, closes any week above 107 even, which would then indicate 125 half over the following 2 to 3 months, where the broader market can place an annual high. Now, downside, the buy signal up to 107 even is null and void following a weekly settlement Friday below 89 and a quarter, an event that should send the market south to 72 half by the end of July and possibly yielding the mid-60s, 64 even by the end of summer, where the broader live cattle market can bottom out well into next year. So to summarize, August live cattle remains constructive above 91 even, expecting 107 and a quarter over the next 3 to 5 weeks, where the broader market can actually top out into later summer. On to July soybeans, we settled 833 and a quarter. We're still in this sort of wide consolidative framework into July expiration between 892 even upside and 769 even downside, both of those levels appreciable distance from present price levels. Both 769 and 892 even can contain activity into July expiration, and if either level is tested over the coming weeks, the market can rotate back to the other extreme within several months. And not until we settle outside this wide zone does this market display a directional dynamic into later summer. And so a weekly settlement above 892 even would indicate 967 even within 2 to 3 months at the most, where the broader bean market can actually place an annual high. And downside, a weekly settlement below 775 even would indicate 677 even within 2 to 3 months at the very most, where the broader soybean market should place an annual low. And finally, July wheat settled 509 even. July wheat remains stable into later summer, holding above 482 even. And 482 even is a level that could contain selling through summer, and above which this market can grind its way back up over the next few months, say into later summer, up to 589 even to 615 even. It's a wide range of long-term resistance. And so on that note, while 522 even can contain buying into next week, a weekly settlement this Friday in the July contract above 522 even would heighten the likelihood for continued price gains by the end of July, possibly into that wide range of long-term resistance between 589 even to 615 even, where Chicago wheat can top out into next year. Now, downside, a meaningful sell signal does emerge if July wheat does place a weekly settlement Friday below that 482 even long-term support level. That would then indicate 418 even over the next several months, where the broader market can bottom out through the balance of the year. So to reemphasize the bottom line, Chicago July wheat remains stable to bullish above 482 even, the 589 even to 615 area in reach by the end of summer, while it turns bearish following a weekly settlement below 482 even, 418 even, then expected over that same time horizon. And that's all I got, Chip. Thanks for having me on the show again. See you next week.
All right. Thank you, Kerry. Appreciate that very much, and happy Memorial Day to you. Davis, here we are, man.
Yeah.
At the end of Memorial Day. That means it's like back to the real stuff tomorrow, dude.
Really?
What? Yeah.
I'm not ready for that. After last week, I mean, I got to be honest, I don't know what it was about last week. Well, and I was working on the landowner, too. It was a busy week for me. A lot of think time, a lot of screen time. But, man, you know what? No, I'm hopeful for what this week might bring. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to tomorrow morning's show.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow afternoon, too. We're going to have Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions on the show tomorrow afternoon. But tomorrow morning, we're going to take a look at the status of the supply chain out there. Okay? We've got representative from the National Grocery Association and a representative from the National Restaurant Association. Happy Memorial Day, everybody.
Yes, yes.
Make the best of it. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on AgriTalk.